The Jordan Aquifer is the largest source of Iowa's groundwater. Water for our homes, for the state's agriculture and industry, and now water specialists are worried about it. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Water experts warn our current water usage rates from this deep underground reservoir are unsustainable, and that we need a new plan. We'll hear from the state geologist and from the leader of a task force looking at the aquifer. Concerns about the future of the Jordan Aquifer. Are you willing to cut back on water usage? Join our conversation after this news. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The Jordan Aquifer. Have you ever heard of it? Well, it runs underneath most of our state of Iowa. In the southeast part of Iowa, it's really quite deep, 2,500 feet underground, while over in the northeast part of the state, it's closer to the surface, comes right up to the surface, in fact. The Jordan Aquifer is the largest source of Iowa's groundwater. It provides drinking water to about 500,000 Iowans. Also, water that's critical to industries like data centers, food processing, and ethanol production. The aquifer also provides water to other states, six other states, including some big metro areas, Milwaukee, Chicago, Minneapolis. Well, now, water experts are warning our current water usage rates from this deep underground reservoir are unsustainable, and we need a new plan. Do we need new restrictions to better protect the massive underground water source? If the aquifer is not managed carefully, what would be the consequences? A couple of the questions we want to look into this hour, starting off with Bob Libra. Bob is Iowa's state geologist. He joins me in the Iowa City studio. Hello, Bob.
Good morning. Oh, afternoon now.
We're just into the afternoon hour. So tell me, make sure we understand what an aquifer is.
Well, an aquifer is a deposit of geologic material that its characteristics are such that water can move through it fairly readily. Maybe not fast like water running down a stream, but it moves through it. And so you can drill a well into it and extract significant volumes of water. So when we talk about something like the Jordan, that's a rock unit. It's made of a couple of different layers. It's about 500, 600, 700 feet thick. You can kind of think of it as a pancake layered across the state and then tipped. So it sticks out of the ground in northeast Iowa. And like you said, half mile or more deep in the far southwest corner.
Mm-hmm. So we shouldn't picture it when I say reservoir. Of course, we're picturing a large cavernous area. It's not just empty space filled up by water. There is rock there, and it's porous rock.
It's porous rock, and so most of the space occupied by it is rock.
Okay.
Yeah.
What kind of rock? Does that matter?
Well, we call this aquifer the Jordan, and that's named after a geologic unit called the Jordan Sandstone. So it's sand that's been cemented naturally together. There's also a big unit in there that we call the Prairie du Chien Dolomite. That's kind of a fractured rock instead of a sand thing. And you put those together, and when people drill wells, they usually use that whole sequence of rocks, and we just come to call it the Jordan Aquifer.
Okay, so tell us more about it. It's big. It stretches all across Iowa, also into other states, this pancake,
yeah.
tilted a little bit underground. It stretches up to the north as well?
It does. Into Minnesota, a bit into Wisconsin, but the pancake keeps going up, and the land surface has eroded down, and so it's absent from some parts of Wisconsin.
So when you get to the point where it comes to the surface, what does it look like?
It looks like if you've ever walked into a quarry or seen an outcrop of fractured rock or sandstone in a road cut. That's what it looks like.
Okay, and there's water coming out of it. When you say the reservoir is up there, then there wouldn't necessarily be water coming out of it, or would there?
No. Okay. It's above the surface, and it's actually kind of drained away there.
So. I see. How long has it been around?
The rocks themselves were laid down, 450, 500 million years ago. So long, long ago by oceans.
Mm. Okay. So the water we're drawing out, and we draw out, what, billions of gallons of water from this? Millions? Billions?
Something like 25 billion gallons a year, something like that, yeah.
So the water we're drawing out of this Jordan Aquifer for all kinds of things is, when's the last time it likely saw the light of day?
Yeah, that's a good question because it's down there so deep.
Right.
And so the water either has to travel through it or slowly seep downwards from the land surface. Mm-hmm. And it's doing both. We've tried in a number of ways to estimate the age, and there are some age dating techniques that you can use, but when you get into really old stuff, it gets harder and harder.
Right.
So we know from a variety of lines of evidence that it's at least tens of thousands of years old and possibly hundreds of thousands, and maybe older if you go to that far southwest corner of the state where it's all tucked away.
Mm-hmm. Bob Libra is the Iowa State geologist telling us about the Jordan Aquifer, which is a big part of our water landscape here. Let me ask you this in a different way. If we could imagine a drop of water falling out of the sky, perhaps on a day like today, and that droplet is destined for the Jordan Aquifer, how long would it take to get there? What does the cycle look like? How much do we know about that?
Yeah, if it happened to fall in the right place in the northeast part of the state, it could actually enter that aquifer in a matter of hours or days.
Oh.
But it would take a long time for it to get to Cedar Rapids or Des Moines or Iowa City. That's where we get into that tens of thousands of years kind of ages.
And if it was a drop of water that fell in the southeast part of the state, it would take a long time.
A long time. Yeah.
We don't know how long. Okay. So we have some alarm bells going off. What are the alarm bells concerning the Jordan Aquifer at this point?
When you pump water out of an aquifer, you and these deep aquifers, we call them confined or artesian. When you drill into them, the water level pops way up above the surface of the aquifer itself, well up above the top of it. What we have been doing is pumping out of it since about 1900. We probably pumped about a trillion and a quarter gallons out of the aquifer in state alone. And so that lowers that artesian pressure surface. When you have a lot of users in one place, the lowering tends to concentrate. And you don't want the pressure surface to get too close to the top of the aquifer. Bad things could happen then. And you want to put a little buffer in there. This is the state's money in the bank groundwater source. It's down deep. It can't be contaminated very readily. So we want to keep keep that trust fund going, I guess you could say.
Okay, it's one big water bank account we want to keep.
We don't want
to eat into the principal as much as perhaps we're doing now.
Yeah, and although we are drawing down that pressure surface all across the state, it's really concentrated in some areas. So we've got Linn County and Johnson County as one example. Webster County up in the Fort Dodge area. And we're kind of starting to get there in Polk County around Des Moines as well.
Okay. My guest, Bob Libra, is the state geologist. He's giving us the fundamentals on the Jordan Aquifer, and that's the largest source of Iowa's groundwater. There are other aquifers around Iowa, right?
Oh, yes. There's a
small ones. This is just happens to be the largest in our state.
It's kind of the most extensive and It's just very dependable. You can always get that several hundred gallons a minute from it if you drill a well into it. So
okay, join our conversation. Do you own a well? Any problems, changes you've noticed in your well? Conservation. Well, we're talking about conservation of water a little bit later. What are your thoughts or questions about that? 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook. I think we're on our Facebook page, Bob, we've been asking, what do you think your daily usage in gallons of water is? And we've been getting some pretty interesting questions on our Facebook page. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk. We'll have some answers. One of our producers, our student producer, went out yesterday to get some answers. I think you'll find those surprising. But first of all, I want to talk with Bob Steigerwald. Todd Steigerwald is manager of the Marion Water Department and leading a task force that's looking at the Jordan Aquifer. Todd, welcome to our program.
Thank you.
When did you realize that the alarms were ringing as far as the Jordan Aquifer? What were you seeing? What happened when you were manager of the Marion Water Department?
Yep, and I'm still the manager of the Marion Water Department. And back in 2010, our growing city, we're about 35,000 in population and growing. We were seeking an additional water source, and we have had four water or wells in the Jordan Aquifer, and we were moving forth with plans to drill a fifth well into the Jordan Aquifer and for our community and future growth. And at that time is when it kind of the light bulb kind of came off, and our water use permit that is allocated from the DNR came back with a modification in it that kind of started the movement of my interest of our long-term growth and where we're going to seek water from the Jordan or from other sources.
A modification? You mean they said you couldn't draw as many gallons as you actually wanted to?
That's correct. It was an unlimited, it was a 2 billion gallons per year permit before with no restrictions. When we entered the permit for the DNR, it was returned with a stipulation that we can no longer get 2 billion from the Jordan Aquifer. We could get only draw 1.4 billion gallons of water from the Jordan Aquifer, and the other 600 million at some point in the future, we would have to find alternative sources, which was kind of an eye-opener for us. We thought we could always rely on the Jordan Aquifer, but that's not the case anymore.
I imagine that sounds like the point at which you rapidly increased your awareness about what this thing is, this Jordan Aquifer. What did you find out?
There's a lot of pressure in our metropolitan area and in Lynn and Johnson County. We have a lot of Jordan aquifers. Again, it's a good sustainable water source for these communities and for the industries. And at that point, we knew with this challenge, I guess at first I thought it was going to be kind of a heartburn, but we called it a challenge after discussing it with the DNR staff and others, it's a good resource down there, but is it unlimited? There's a limit to it, and we're just drawing so much water out of the aquifer that at some point we're going to be at a point beyond return here.
Mm-hmm. So, Todd, now what governs how much we can take out of there right now? There's something about it cannot go below a 200-foot level. Now, where does that come from? Can you give us some history there?
Yeah, the history there, back in the 70s, the legislators at the time and probably DNR staff kind of noticed that there was some draw and some issues occurring in the Jordan Aquifer, so they created a kind of a vague law saying they created a baseline, and they said at this point, at this elevation, nobody should go 200 foot below that in their well, and it was a static water reading to a static water reading. And that was 35 years ago in the late 70s there. Now they are seeing that communities, areas are approaching that 200-foot rule. And there was not a lot of details what happens when you get there. It was kind of just made aware, and here we are.
Okay, so you've got this task force, and you're saying, okay, so we have to do things differently because we're approaching this level that we set in the 1970s as a danger zone. Did you come up with new recommendations?
Yes, we did. Using the computers that they have today that they didn't have back then, they are able to model the aquifer, and Bob Libras and Mike Gannon can also probably go into more detail regarding that. Mike Gannon's been an excellent resource for us. But they know that there's a lot of water down in the Jordan Aquifer. Our task force, our group, which was EO80, commissioned by the governor's office, looked at the issue at hand, got the facts, and based on the data that we do have and the modeling that has been done, everyone feels confident that we can still continue to pull water from the Jordan Aquifer. However, We don't want to take it for granted. We're going to do it a step-by-step, a tiered approach is where we're going. So there's going to be three different tiers as we move forth in the future. The rule has not been implemented yet. It's still under public comment and moving forth in that direction. Hopefully, there'll be some information shared and it'll be approved here this fall. Mm-hmm. But there'll be some public meetings coming up here in April. And from that point on, we're going to continue to lower the water level in the wells, but do it at a cautious, step-by-step approach.
Now, Todd, I imagine many people are asking, will it affect me and my water usage? Will it increase my water bill? Will we ever have water rationing? Is that ever foreseen in these new recommendations?
Everything is on the table. Will it happen next week? No. Will it happen in a couple of years? Maybe. Will it be out there 40, 50 years from now? Yes. The tiered system gives a lot more time to continue business as usual. However, as you approach this next level, all the wells in the state are going to be still classified as a Tier 1 business as usual. However, okay. There are going to be areas that are going to fall into a Tier 2 here in the next 5 to 10 years, depending on the pumping rates and the stress put on that aquifer.
And Tier 2 means?
Tier 2 means they're going to enact conservation practices and measures and start to look for alternative drinking water sources. You cannot no longer rely 100% on the Jordan Aquifer. And that's where Marion, even though we're not in the Tier 2 category, we've already taken steps knowing that at some point in the future, we cannot rely 100% on the Jordan Aquifer. We're just last spring installed two new Silurian wells, which are a different aquifer system, and we're going to start to rely more on the Silurian Aquifer and a little bit less on the Jordan so that we do not fall into a Tier 3 category, which is the turn the pump off, or you cannot pump it any lower at that point.
Then we're practically in Southern California.
Well, I don't know if we'd go that far, but we hopefully with good conservation practices, awareness, maybe changing of the rate structures, everyone will be on board, and that we can prevent the inevitable of pumping the water too far down in the aquifer. Mm-hmm. There is a cost as you draw the water down and down and down in that aquifer, the energy cost increases very much so. So there would have to be a rate increases if we continue to draw that water down and do not look at other alternative sources, alternative conservation practices. We are on a you can't turn around at this point. We got to start looking towards the future.
Want to stay ahead of it. Right.
Yep, stay ahead of it,
conserve it. Measure it so that we don't get behind. Bob Libra, anything to add to what Todd Steigerwald said there about the new way forward?
Yeah, what we've and Todd provided a lot of guidance and leadership to the committee that developed the recommendations for new rules. One of the things we've tried to do with this is create these, as he said, these groundwater models that can forecast what's going to happen. Where are we going to be 20 years from now? And so you look out into the future, and we can see some problems there. So this is really a fairly proactive step to go, let's put some rules in place and get the situation described to people so that they can start making alternative plans, because the longer you have to plan, the less it hurts.
Right.
And the more chance you have to just get it done nice and logically instead of suddenly going, we're turning your well off.
Right. Conservation is better than being
exactly.
having to stop
yes.
cold turkey, especially when it comes to an essential substance like water. Let's talk with John Horrell. John is in Fort Dodge. He's the water plant superintendent. Is it Horrell or Horrell, John?
Horrell.
Just like Morrell. Got it.
There you go.
All right.
I have the money.
So you tap into the Jordan Aquifer there in Fort Dodge for some of your water, right?
Yes. We actually use two different aquifers here in Fort Dodge. We use a Mississippian, which is a limestone formation, and a Jordan Aquifer, which is a sandstone formation. And we draw about 66% of our water that we use from our wells, and then we just use wells. We don't use river water here in Fort Dodge at all. 66% is provided by the Jordan Aquifer.
Mm-hmm. Well, how do you determine what percentage comes from where?
Just by the wells. When I've got, well, of course, I'm sure Todd is the same stuff. You monitor all your pumping meters from all your wells. You totalize them up and go for the year, because that's what I just did probably about, 3 months ago to get a good idea what was going on. So. Mm-hmm.
Tell me about the uses for water in the Fort Dodge area. That the water that you're pumping is going to homes, of course. Where else?
One of the things in Fort Dodge has changed quite a bit is we have the Iowa's Crossroads of Global Innovation, which is an ag run by Cargill, setting out west of Fort Dodge, about 7 miles. We supply water to them for their industrial use and some other small plants out there. We also take care of their wastewater back to Fort Dodge. They use about a little over half the water that we produce here in Fort Dodge.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And our average used to be about 4.5 million a day, and now it's running close to 9.
Okay, so what do you think of the worries about the Jordan Aquifer?
Well, here in Fort Dodge, Mike Gannon came down and helped me, just like Todd said with him. And we looked at all of our pumping levels, and we're not even in Tier 2, even close to Tier 2. We've got another 100 foot before we get to that. And I looked at all my pumping records here, and we have not significantly dropped over the last couple of years on our pumping levels. Now, one thing we're lucky in Fort Dodge is a thicker aquifer down here in Fort Dodge, what it is over in Marion. So they have problems over there because I believe it's a lot thinner aquifer to draw out of.
Is that right, Bob Libro? The comparison of the part of the aquifer that they're each tapping into?
Yeah, it's there's some difference in the thickness of the aquifer and also just how much artesian pressure there is. And Webster County, Fort Dodge, has more to work with.
Okay.
They've got more to play with. They've got more buffer going for them than Marion or eastern parts of the state do.
Mm-hmm. When the municipalities think about where they're going to get their water, what is the difference between water quality pulled out of an aquifer and, say, a river?
Well, streams have to be treated a lot more. They can be full of sediment when the river's running high. They have to be chlorinated or some other kind of process to kill off any bacteria, pathogens, viruses. So it's a lot more expensive treatment. And, of course, you have to have a good-sized river there. Rivers are easy to contaminate. On the other hand, if you're a bigger city, they have lots and lots and lots of water. They're a much bigger resource, volume-wise, than groundwater is.
Okay. Bob Libber is with us, the Iowa State geologist, talking about the Jordan Aquifer, and joining us as well, Todd Steigerwald is the manager of the Marion Water Department, and John Horrell, likewise, he's the water plant superintendent in Fort Dodge, both drawing from the Jordan Aquifer. We're talking about concerns over the usage. Trillions of gallons have been pulled out of this aquifer. We want to hear from you, your questions about this. And also, when we come back, we were curious about how much water we think we use. So we sent our student producer, Julia Davis, out to ask that question to some people in Iowa City. So you can answer it for yourself over this break. How much water in gallons do you think you use on average per day? I think the figures, when we give them to you after the break, will surprise you. How much do you use per day in gallons of this life-sustaining substance, water? That's what we're talking about today. We'll be right back with more River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. So good to have you with us on this edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. Just thinking that our name is especially apt today, River to River. We're talking about the Jordan Aquifer. This is described as like a pancake type of, it's made out of stone, but it's a porous stone, so it holds a lot of water. It runs underneath most of the state. In the southeast part of Iowa, it's 2,500 feet below the ground, and this pancake runs up over to the northeast, where it comes right up to the surface. It's the largest source of Iowa's groundwater. There other aquifers in the state, but this is the largest source of our groundwater, providing drinking water to about 500,000 Iowans. Also, a lot of water that's critical to food processing, ethanol productions, all kinds of industry, energy production, for example. Joining us today, Bob Libra, to tell us about this aquifer and the consequences of drawing too much out of it, which apparently we have been doing in the last few decades. Bob is the state geologist. Joining us as well, Todd Steigerwald is manager of the Marion Water Department and leader of a task force looking at the aquifer and possible new recommendations for water usage. John Harrell is with us from Fort Dodge, the water plant superintendent there. This half hour, we want to talk about conservation, a little bit more about the problem, but also about conservation. And before we took the break, I asked you, our listeners, to think about how much water, on average, you use in gallons per day. And we had a number of people tell us through our social media, Facebook, Annette says, 120 gallons. Jeff says, 78, Matt, 10 to 15. Well, we were curious how much we think we use. We sent our student producer, Julia Davis, out to sample some opinion in Iowa City. Here's some of the responses she got when she asked, how much water do you think you use in gallons on average every day?
Gosh, I would hope less than 5 for sure.
20 gallons is a guess.
3?
20?
I would say at least 6 to 8 gallons.
Maybe 10 gallons at least?
30 gallons maybe.
Probably somewhere around 3 or 4 gallons.
I would say I use 7 gallons of water a day.
Ooh, that's pretty exact. 7 gallons a day. In actual fact, the average American uses, get this, between 60 and 100 gallons per day. And so Julia, out on the street, shared the reactions she got when she told them that figure.
That's staggering.
That is really surprising. Wow.
A day? Wow. I guess I'll be taking shorter showers.
A day? What?
I'm not too surprised because some people probably have large families and do a lot of laundry and dishes and things like that.
Okay, and then Julia finished up by asking these people yesterday, do we value water enough?
I don't think I have a good point of reference for how much my water costs or what I pay for it, or maybe that's a sign of how privileged we are living in the United States.
I don't feel that I'm paying too much.
It's probably undervalued.
I'm aware of it, but I don't spend a lot of time thinking about it, no.
Probably not. Clean water is at a premium. It's essential.
Don't spend extra time in the shower other than what I need to do in there. But I don't typically, this is not something that's on my mind each and every day, not really.
Okay. Bob Libra up there, you're chuckling as we're hearing some of the responses here to these people. This really reveals that we have a, I won't say complete lack of awareness of how much water we use, but we are way off, most of us.
Yeah, we use a lot of water and you know, so you run a washing machine, you run a dishwasher, you take a shower, you're flushing the toilet. In the summer, if you're watering a lawn or a garden
right.
or the shrubs. So, yeah, it adds up to a lot of water.
Okay, and that's just residential use. When we add in industry, power generation, ethanol production across the state. Do you have any idea how much water we use if you said that in per capita terms?
Yeah, if you really look at the total water we are consuming, taking in, it's about 3 billion gallons a day, so about 1,000 gallons per citizen. Mostly that's cooling water for power generation. Like about 70% of it is. So that's water that doesn't water never really disappears. But most of that water is taken out of a river, and after they're done with it, it's put back in the river. But we have to have it. So if you look at how much water you have, that's part of the number you have to think about if you like to have the lights on.
Now, John Harrell there in Fort Dodge, you've been aware of how much we use for a long time, I imagine. Or was there a point at which you were surprised as well?
Well,
Well, I've been to a lot of different conferences, American Water Works, and they always talk about people not understanding how much water they use on a daily basis. And like those comments that came from the people from Iowa City. 3 gallons a day. I mean, you flush a toilet, even a water conservative toilet, that's 3 gallons right there, one flush. So people just don't understand about the water. They just don't know how much they use. And industry is a big user, especially here in Fort Dodge. Like I said, half our water that we produce here goes out to an ethanol plant, a Cargill plant, and CJ Bio, which uses products from Cargill. So we have a lot of water that goes out there every single day.
1-866-780-9100, talking about the Jordan Aquifer, our use of water. Jordan Aquifer is the largest source of groundwater in the state. Let's talk to Amber in Carroll. Hi, Amber. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure thing.
Great show. So about a year and a half ago, I ran for city council, and a hot topic here in Carroll is, when are we going to run out of water? We also pull from the Jordan Aquifer, and we don't have any other source at this time. And what I found so interesting, and I'm in my lower 30s, so that summer, while I was running for city council, we all had to ration our water. If you lived in a house with an odd number, you watered on these days and an even number, you watered on these days.
Was this in Iowa, or were you living somewhere else?
No, I was here. I was here in Iowa.
So it was a drought. It was a drought summer.
Right, absolutely, drought summer. And you would have liked to have thought that people thought we were going to run out of water tomorrow. I mean, there was just this community-wide uproar that I thought was so interesting. And so I dug a little bit deeper, asked a few questions. You know, what's your big concern? Well, we don't get to water our lawns every day.
Right.
And I thought, wow, shouldn't you be more concerned if there's going to be water coming out of the tap? Beyond the fact that if we're getting to the point where there's no water coming out of the tap, there's something bigger going on in the city government that isn't being handled. And so I don't know if it's a generational thing or if it's just local custom or what, but I do feel like, yeah, what an honor to conserve water, because I enjoy clean water every day. You know, we live in a country where we get to enjoy it every day.
Yeah.
I think conservation is just good stewardship. And though it does seem renewable, it certainly doesn't renew as quickly as we'd like it to. So I think, yeah, I'd like to just encourage or set the charge for, let's all start thinking a little bit harder about how much we are using. I was so fascinated by the numbers some of these people were coming up with.
It wasn't that amazing. So, I love your I love your phrase, Amber, an honor to save water. Let's keep that in our minds. Amber, we want to get to some others here, but thank you for sharing your story and your reflections from Carroll.
Thanks so much. Have a great day.
Okay. You too. John Dunn is with us as well, Director of Water and Pollution Control for the City of Ames. John, are you there? John, are you there? Okay, now, John, I think you can hear me. John, are you there? Not hearing John. Okay, we're trying to get that fixed. Hopefully, John, are you there now? Okay. John Dunn, not there. Okay, let's talk a little bit more about conservation. Bob Liber, let me start with you. There's a nice little story we had from Amber in Carroll as well. People have to sort of reprioritize. If they think the lawn is the only problem we might have going forward, they've got to do some education.
If you think of how much water ends up on people's lawns during a hot summer, it's an awful lot. And it's one thing you don't have to do. I think most people that are water operators, and if things are getting tight, they will go, you know, your lawn will survive. It'll look ugly, but it'll be there come next year. Water your vegetables, water your shrubs or any new plantings, things like that. But you can back off, and you can cut your water demand an incredible amount. And frankly, just, yeah, putting that water on the lawn, that's a big one.
Okay.
When we have droughts, people in the state usually respond very well, and they can cut back their demand on a city water supply quite well. But the biggest thing they're giving up is watering the lawn.
Okay. Let's go to John Dunn. I think we have him now in the city of Ames. Hi, John.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're Director of Water and Pollution Control for the City of Ames. We're talking about water conservation at this point. Now, I understand that Ames, you do not draw from the Jordan Aquifer, but we're getting in touch with you because you've had some success with water conservation campaigns to decrease usage in peak months. Tell us about your approach.
Well, you know, Ames is a progressive community, and like a lot of college towns, social consciousness runs pretty high. So conservation messaging has always been a part of our discussion with customers. You know, we've always encouraged folks to fix drippy faucets or leaky toilets. But in the early 2000s, we began noticing an increasing trend of peak summer water usage. And we were really concerned that if the rate of growth continued, that we'd reach a point in just a few years where we would exceed our treatment plant capacity. So it was really at that point that we turned up the volume, if you will, on our conservation efforts and implemented a sustained drinking water conservation program.
Mm-hmm. So you could have given, maybe you did give them the choice, say, hey, folks, we've got to build more capacity, which will cost you money, or we've got to ratchet down our use.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, we understand that people will conserve water for different reasons, different motivations. For some people, it's to save money. So to encourage conservation to that segment of our customers, we adopted a block rate structure in the summer so that above a certain threshold, water starts to become more expensive.
Hmm.
And that sends a clear price signal to the customers that it's really that peak summer usage that's a significant driver of the capital expenses of our utilities. You know, it's really expensive to have capacity that's only used a few weeks out of the year, and now we're properly conveying that to our customers.
Hmm.
Others are really motivated by more of the societal and social benefits of conservation. So we have a sustained marketing program that we call our Smart Water Program that really focuses on helping the community understand the benefits of using water-efficient landscaping and the importance of properly irrigating a lawn. And because we have here within the city, we've got a kind of a comprehensive conservation program that encompasses a lot of city programs like energy efficiency, you know, stormwater and watershed management, solid waste, all of those. By blending those all together, then it helps us tie together our water conservation message, for example, with things like energy efficiency, because the two are closely interlinked. It takes a lot of energy to treat water, and it takes an awful lot of water to provide energy. And so we really are able to tie those two messages together.
But John Dunn, it sure sounds like you're at the forefront of making people aware and conserving not only water but other resources and energy here. Do you think Ames is a model community in this way? Do you get the feeling in talking to other communities that you're sort of out ahead of this?
I don't know if we're out ahead of everybody. I think as an industry, as a profession, the drinking water community can do a lot more about promoting the value of water. That really is one of the tangible goals of our Smart Water Conservation Program, is to just raise awareness of customers about the role water plays in their lives. And just like those folks that you interviewed a little bit ago, helping them understand that if the drinking water and wastewater systems were not in place, then the modern lifestyle that we all enjoy would just simply not be possible. You couldn't bring 60,000 people together in one spot and prevent disease outbreaks or have tremendous environmental impacts. So that's the story that we're trying to tell at every opportunity about how dependable and reliable we are and how important we are in maintaining the modern way of life.
You've said a couple things that do work. You're pressing people, certain people just saying conservation, appealing to society, their feeling for society. Other people, you got to sock it to their pocketbook, I guess, John Dunn. Are there any things that you would say through your experience that you thought would work that didn't really work as well as you thought?
You know, the thing that's probably the most frustrating about a conservation program is just trying to gauge how effective it is, because water demand can swing pretty wildly from one year to the next, depending on wet year versus dry year. So it's always a challenge for us to try to figure out, you know, what the right amount of resources are to dedicate towards the conservation message. The best tangible measure we've got is that as we've undertaken a process here and are now underway with constructing a new drinking water facility, and we did have to raise our rates some to be able to do that, but we went out of and told our story to our customers in a very factual, transparent way, and in response, we've seen an amazing amount of support for the community for this new project, and really a lot of excitement from the community to see the new facility come online.
Interesting. So thank you. John Dunn of Ames, the Director of Water and Pollution Control for the City of Ames. Very enlightening, John Dunn. Thank you.
You're welcome.
So as we listen to that, Bob Libra, so it is really, it seems like, should I say low-hanging fruit, but educating gets us a long ways. Once people understand where our water comes from, the energy it takes to pull it out of the aquifer, if it's a Jordan, just understands that you can't take it for granted. People do this by themselves?
Yeah,
to a certain extent. A lot of people.
They do, but there hasn't been a lot of really ongoing sustained efforts to do it. Ames is, in my opinion, one of the better examples of places that has done it very well. you know, we have places that draw water from aquifers that aren't down deep like the Jordan. They are replenished when it rains. Mm-hmm. They're not going to run out. You have to worry about them during a drought, but otherwise, it's a different kind of question. But still, the cost in energy and chemicals to treat every drop of water so that it's good enough for human consumption and meets federal regulations, you know, as John said, that's expensive. Mm-hmm. And then a lot of that water ends up on the lawn. Well.
Right. Let's go to Mayor Dodd as our hour comes to a close. Mayor Dodd joining us from Mount Vernon, listening there. What's on your mind, Mayor Dodd? Have you got an idea for conservation?
I do, actually. So I'm in the detailing business, and looking at some of the places on the West Coast, they have restrictions on water usage, but also wastewater disposal. So looking at how those guys are working, there's a few strategies that we use where we end up washing a car with 2 gallons of water total.
2 gallons total for an entire car?
2 gallons total, yep. And that's a
big part. How do you do that?
Well, we use a combination of coatings that keep the car cleaner to begin with, but also we use a no-rinse wash where instead of using a soapy-type substance, we emulsify and encapsulate dirt so it slides off without damaging the car. And right after that wash step, we dry off. So not only are we saving time and water by not rinsing, it's a lot faster. So I can get a car done with less water, and it looks good. It's protected, and customers are very intrigued by this. They're very skeptical at first, but slowly they're jumping on the bandwagon.
And it makes a difference to your bottom line as a car detailer, too. So there's motivation for you.
Absolutely. I mean, there's definitely the time incentive, and if I can carry 2 gallons of water with me versus a 100-gallon water tank, that makes my job a lot easier as well.
Okay. Mayor Dodd, we have to go. Thank you for that story from Mount Vernon. I want to go to Todd Steigerwald, if you're still with us here, very, very quickly. When you look into the future, perhaps I can put this to you, with all your research there as manager of the Marion Water Department and the leader of this task force looking at the Jordan Aquifer, describe the future if we manage better compared to a future in which we continue to use current water usage, which is pretty darn wasteful.
Yeah, we can be very wasteful. Again, the heart there is on the lawn watering. That's a big component. Every community sees that during the summer. If we can just let Mother Nature water the lawn in the future, when it rains, it rains. It'll green. It'll survive. The cost to water and have the green yard is very expensive, and Marion also, following in John Dunn's role, has also changed their rate structure so that we have a inclining rate block structure. So the more water you use, the more expensive that water becomes. And instead of just being a seasonal thing, Marion has actually taken it one step further and put it in year-round so that you promote good conservation of the being good stewards of the water use that we do have in our area. In the future, I hope that technology will come about. What we see out in the East and West Coast where they are struggling to have water, I think that will migrate back to the Midwest, and I think everyone will take a better role in being better stewards of a very precious resource that we do have and do, unfortunately, take for granted until it doesn't come out of the tap.
Okay. Todd Steigerwald, thank you for joining us this hour, manager of the Marion Water Department, leader of a task force looking at the use of the aquifer water from the Jordan Aquifer. John Harrell, Fort Dodge Water Plant Superintendent, thank you. And Bob Libra in our Iowa City studio, state geologist. We've gained a lot of knowledge here. Water awareness for our state. We can all put that to use. Thank you all for joining us. And tomorrow on the program, Politics Wednesday, of course, we'll look at the fallout, political fallout over Benjamin Netanyahu's visit. Also, an update on the war in Ukraine and that murder. Could we call it an assassination in Moscow? We'll talk about that as well, of course. River to River is produced by Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, Claire Roth. Also, thanks to Julia Davis. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.